You know, as we've studied the book of Ruth, I just wrote four messages, this being the fourth one. If you have the spiritual gift of teaching, you'd be very, very frustrated when you study this book. Why is that? Number one, the author never identifies himself. We have no idea exactly who wrote the book of Ruth. The other thing you see there is there's a famine over in Bethlehem. You can go just a few miles down the road to Moab, the land of the pagans, and the food is plenteous. The question is, what sin did the children of Israel commit that God would allow or cause a famine to come upon that land? Then we look at Naomi, and we see her two sons. And we remember Mahlon and Chilion. They never had children. And some Bible scholars say that might be a judgment of God on them because Ruth had a child soon after she and Boaz married. And then we don't know why Naomi lost her family's land. We're just not told. So this is a teacher's nightmare because the person with the gift of teaching wants to know all the answers and the minute details in a passage. Then we come to chapter 4 and the author stops and just camps out on a single legal transaction. And why would the author just skip over significant details and spend a major part of his portion of this book on this business deal? Because there are major truths that we can learn from the business dealings with this man of God. Some of you heard the story before about the little girl who had learned about Snow White and the seven dwarfs. She was telling that story to her mother. She was so excited. And she got down to the place where the prince kissed Snow White and awakened her from her sleep. And the little girl said, "Mother, do you know what happened then?" And the mother said, "Yes, they lived happily ever after." And the little girl said, "No, Mama, they got married." Well, when you look at Ruth and Boaz, they got married, but according to this story, they lived happily ever after. I got some good news for you. One of these days, we're going to get married and live happily ever after. And the last few verses of the book of Ruth tells us how everything ends up in Ruth's case and reminds us everything is going to end up in ours. We that are earthly servants of Christ will one day become the heavenly spouse of Christ. Today we're workers in the field, but one day we're going to move out of the field into His house. Now let's look at the story of Ruth. We see that true love is a loyal love. It must be a kind love. It must be a trusting love. And then we're going to see in chapter 4 that love is very valued, especially in our families. So let's look at true love is necessary in our families. Let's look at the first 9 verses. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian redeemer he had mentioned came along. Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. And Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here." And they did so. Then he said to the guardian redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative, her husband, Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you'll redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know, for no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." Verse 6, "At this the guardian redeemer said, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself, I cannot do it." Now in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself." And then he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today your witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. We see here that love is necessary in our families. Notice that Boaz went to that kinsman redeemer at the town gate, which would be the equivalent of our city hall. Notice there that not only did he meet this kinsman redeemer, he also had 10 elders there acting in a legal capacity. They were going to be witnesses to this business deal. Now he offers the relative the opportunity to buy the field that belonged to Naomi's husband, and the man indicated he would do so. Then Boaz reminded the kinsman redeemer that in buying the land, you're automatically going to acquire Naomi's widowed daughter Ruth as his wife. And at this, the relative was unwilling to go through with the deal, saying, I might endanger my own estate. Now notice this, he realized the field he bought would not belong to him and the children he already had. This would belong, listen carefully, would be Ruth's and would belong to any children she bore to him. In addition, the responsibility of financially supporting Naomi, Ruth, and any children born to Ruth would fall upon his shoulders. He might have to subdivide some of his own property that's belonged to his existing children, and so it would lead to all kinds of complications. So we see here, when faced with all those additional obligations, he yielded his rights to the next in line, which was Boaz. And notice, he took off his sandals. That was a way of certifying a business deal. Now, this at this point, you can almost imagine the wave of relief that came over Boaz. He wanted to marry Ruth, but he had to follow the laws of the land and the traditions. That's like, guys, when you ask a girl out to the prom, and you're hoping she's going to do what? Say yes. But then you find out there's another guy in your way that asked first. You're hoping he'll get a stomach virus, and then you'll be able to take her to the prom. So after this guy finds out there's a financial commitment and all kinds of legalities, he decided, I'm just going to pass on this deal. The second thing I want you to see tonight is true love is necessary for a strong witness for Christ. You go down to verse 10. He says, I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today, you're witnesses. Look at verse 11. Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, we're witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrath and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you this by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Now, these two paragraphs here illustrate the impressions Ruth left on the men and women of that community. First of all, the elders at the gate served as the legal witnesses for this business deal. Look at this. They compared Ruth to two matriarchs of the nation of Israel, Rachel and Leah. The women make this observation. They look at Naomi and say, Ruth, your daughter-in-law, is better to you than if you had 7 sons who were faithful to you. Now, I want you to think about this. That is quite a compliment, because Ruth is a Moabitess. She's from a pagan land. And I want you to know, among the children of God, there was tremendous racial prejudice back and forth between the Moabites and the Israelites. And I want you to know, these women there in Bethlehem, they looked at Ruth and said, she's better than 7 sons if they were faithful to you. Love is so valuable to our Christian witness. It's a truth that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You know, in a church like this, the way you get to know people is when they go through a crisis. And we hire new people on our staff. They say, well, I just don't know how I'm going to get to know all these people. Well, that's another reason we give everybody on call with hospital visitation, because they will get to know our people when they're going through crisis situations. That's not the only way, but that's one way you can reach out and connect with those people and let them see their heart. Jesus made this statement about his followers: by this will all men know that you're my disciples, if you have love for one another. You know, we've got some of the same barriers to overcome that Ruth did. People in our society, I think, are harder to reach for Jesus than they were 25 years ago. People are very slow to trust. You've been conned before, and so have I. We tend to have a little of that which is skeptical, like what's in it for you mentality. These barriers can be broken down with love. Understand from history that Dolly Madison, the wife of the fourth president of the United States, was one of the most popular women in all of American history. Wherever she went, she charmed and captivated everybody, whether they were well-known, rich, poor, or just plain obscure. Somebody went to her one day and said, how do you have so much power over people? And she said, power over people? She said, I have none. I desire none. I merely love everybody. What a Christ-like characteristic. A preaching intern was hired on a staff. And one day the pastor went in for the Sunday morning service, and he saw that intern walk in. And the intern came to the platform, and he walked by 30 of their members and never acknowledged one of them, didn't speak to anybody. He just came straight to the platform. Well, you know what happened to that intern, don't you? On Monday morning, the pastor called him into his office. And he looked at the intern. He said, I just have a question for you. What is your business? What's the main purpose of what you do here at this church? And the young intern said, I'm in the doctrine business. The pastor said, no, you're not. He said, well, I'm in the Bible business. The pastor said, no, you're not. And the young man said, well, pastor said, I'm in the preaching business. He said, no, you're not. He said, you're in the people business. And until you learn to speak to and love people, people are not going to be interested in your Bible, reading it, or listening to your sermons. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the people business. Do we get the point? As a church, we have a mission, and that's make disciples of all nations, baptizing them into Christ, and then teaching them to observe everything. The other day, our staff went to the funeral. Some of us were able to go to the visitation, then the funeral for Ellen McMeekin, my administrative assistant's mother. And we just all sat together. That's just the thing. That's just what we're going to do. And somebody came, several people have come to me later and said, how impressive that your staff all came to that memorial service. I said, I don't think it's very impressive. I think that's just showing our heart. We are in the people business. The question is, do we communicate love to other people? Do we communicate love to our neighbors? On three sides, I have senior adults as neighbors, and I love all of them. They all have very distinct personalities. They like to aggravate me, and I love to aggravate them. But one thing I've told them, I said, if you ever need me, make sure you call. You can call me 24/7. If I'm not at home, if I'm out of town, I can call somebody to get to you. Well, just a few weeks before Christmas, I got a call at 7:30 one morning, and it was my neighbor Betty across the street. She said, Phil, I called you at 2:30 this morning. You didn't answer, and I left a message. She said, Jerry went to bed last night with a sinus infection. He decided he'd get up and sleep in his chair. And she said, at 2:30 in the morning, I walked in to check on him, and I found him dead in our den floor. She said, I needed you, but you didn't answer. And I left a message. Do you know how bad I felt? And then I told Elaine, I didn't hear the phone ring, and the house phone is as far as from here to that armrest to my head. And yes, the ringer is not on silent. We also have a little answering machine next to it, so I can hear your voice when you call. And after we hung up, I hit the voice message. 2:30 a.m. This is Betty across the street. I need your help. I just found my husband dead in the floor. And when she called me at 7:30 in the morning and said, you didn't hear the sirens? She said, the police, the fire trucks, and the ambulances were here in just a few moments. And I hadn't heard anything. Ladies and gentlemen, I felt like a bad check. When she's out of town, I'll be getting her mail and her newspaper and rolling her garbage can down to the street as long as she lives there, just trying to make up for the time that I wasn't there. We need to communicate love to our neighbors. We need to communicate love to those at our schools. Someone has said, to love the world is no chore. My trouble is the man next door. Then true love is necessary to our service. Beginning in verse 16. So then Naomi took the child. Let's go back to verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he had made love to her. The Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He'll renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, Naomi has a son. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Amminadab. Amminadab the father of Nahshon. Nahshon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz. Boaz the father of Obed. Obed the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the father of David. True love is necessary to our service. In this last section, we note the fact that Ruth was used by God to accomplish His plans and purpose. And notice, Ruth gave birth to Obed. Ruth's son Obed is placed in the genealogy of David, Israel's greatest king. Ruth gave birth to the grandfather of King David, and therefore an ancestor of Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world. We find the genealogy once again in Matthew chapter 1, where Matthew gives the human ancestry of Jesus traced through his human stepfather, Joseph. In verse 5 of that genealogy, we read of Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. You go back and look in Matthew. You don't see many women's names in Matthew's genealogy. When they're recorded, it usually indicates special recognition and honor. Ruth's name is included in Jesus' genealogy because God valued the love with which she offered with her service and obedience. I think the most valuable thing we have to offer God is our love. God can use anybody to accomplish His purpose. You know, when you go back in Romans chapter 9, you go back and you'll see an Old Testament picture there. God used Pharaoh to His own glory. Pharaoh thought he was resisting God and doing battle with God. But in fact, God was accomplishing His purpose through the rebellious king all along. God can use those who know Him and those who are ignorant of Him. God can go use those who are willing to be used and those who are resistant. It doesn't matter. Because God's plan's not going to be thwarted by man's effort or his lack of effort. How many of you have ever heard the name George McCluskey? See, not many of you know the name of George McCluskey. Now, those of you who are parents and grandparents, here's a great idea for you. Years ago, George McCluskey started his family. And he decided that he would devote an hour a day praying for his family. From 11 a.m. to noon, every day he prayed for his family. Then, one day he's just kind of convicted that though they hadn't been born yet, he needed to start praying for three generations of his family. That's what he did every day from 11 till noon. Well, I want you to know that he and his wife finally had two daughters. And as he had prayed for years, his two daughters committed their lives to Jesus Christ. And they married men who went into full-time Christian ministry. And I want you to know those two couples produced four girls and one boy. You with me so far? The four girls married preachers, bless their heart. And the son became a pastor. Well, the first two children born to that generation were both boys. And upon graduation from high school, both of the boys went to college. As sophomores in college, these cousins roomed together. One went in the ministry. The other one felt the pressure. But he decided that he liked psychology. He majored in psychology. He earned his doctorate. He wrote many books that were bestsellers. He was on every day of the week for years and years on over 1,000 radio stations. The man's name is James Dobson. Focus on the family. He was part of the answer of a man's prayers three generations prior. All of our generation here watched that miracle. Let me ask you a question. If you have children, are you praying for them? Are you praying for three generations of your family? Well, there'll be many people telling this story in Ruth chapter 4. They've all been witnesses of answered prayer for Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz. Remember, true love is valuable. It's valuable in our families, in our witness, and in our service. And just as Ruth found a kinsman redeemer God provided, so do we. We have a kinsman redeemer who's a descendant on Joseph's side of Boaz, and he's already gone to court on our behalf. And he's spoken for us and paid the price to buy us back from slavery and from bondage. Aren't you thankful? You know, today, I don't know why, I was just thinking about going to my parents' home in Augusta. I don't know about you, but I dream and imagine in color. And today I just imagined I'd driven to Augusta and I'd walked through my parents' den off their carport. My parents had their den made out of that old-fashioned pine paneling. And then Dad's cabinets were made, Mom's cabinets were made, custom-made out of that pine paneling, piece by piece. And then they put copper handles and doorknobs on all those cabinets. It was just, I just walked back in and there was Mom and Dad. And we were just having a discussion. You know, I miss that. I miss that so bad. Son, how's your church? How are you doing? How's Delane? Well, let me tell you about the other children, how they're doing and where they are. And then oftentimes we'd sit down at that kitchen table and just have a talk. Mama would fix country ham, homemade biscuits. We'd have grits, real grits, not quick grits, scrambled eggs, and Mama's homemade pear preserves. We had our heart-to-heart talks right there. I got a lot of advice at that kitchen table. I'm so thankful we have a kinsman redeemer, because I'm going to see him again in our heavenly home, never to know that separation again. I'm so thankful for the principles of Ruth, the assurance we have, and the model of love we're to display to other people. Will you stand right where you are, heads are bowed, eyes are closed.